You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Get to people, yeah.
What are you gonna
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God, for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say, Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe. Civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say, Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does the captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Denmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashay. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Brothers and sisters, I have a special guest. I want to get right to it, and I'll make announcements and all the other stuff in the second hour of the program, because this brother doesn't have much time, and I appreciate him and giving me this time. And he's a man that I have a lot of admiration and respect for. I used to read his columns, World's World, in the Milwaukee Community Journal. Brother Mike Holt is the editor. And then I met him at the, I believe it was in Cobra Conference in Chicago. He's a Chicago icon, a Chicago legend. Brothers and sisters, Dr. Conrad Whirl. Dr. Conrad Whirl. Conrad.
Good morning, Brother Oshie.
Good morning, Conrad. How you doing?
Doing fine, brother.
Good, good. Listen, I know I've been reading some things that I've seen on Facebook and other venues. And, of course, I read, and brothers and sisters, you need to read the Chicago Crusader. Go to Chicago. Excuse me, ChicagoCrusader.com, and pick up Dr. Conrad Whirl's articles once a week in the Chicago Crusader. I've been keeping up with those. In fact, your latest one is Reparations and Pan-Africanism. You know, this whole big thing about reparations, and I know you've been in this movement for a very long time. I mean, a real long time, from almost since its inception, in terms, not with Cali House, of course. In fact, tell the listeners who Cali House was, because we need to get some history here on the reparations move, because now that these presidential candidates are talking about, at least a few of them are, about providing reparations for American Africans, there's a context that's even deeper than that that our listeners need to know. Go ahead, Conrad.
Well, the origin of the reparations movement occurred after the Civil War on the sellout of the so-called 40 acres and a mule, where General Sherman had been given the order to set aside land in the southeast region of the United States. When Lincoln was assassinated, Andrew Johnson became the president, and he took back that and changed the whole policy and gave the land back to the Confederate soldiers, some 800 acres of land that was to be set aside for the ex-enslaved Africans. So that is the origin of the beginning of the reparations movement that kicked out in the late, early 1890s under the auspices of an organization called the National Ex-Slave Pension and Bounty Association, which were fighting for pensions for ex-enslaved Africans, their families, and hired. Cali House, as you mentioned, since this is Women's History Month, was a major leader in that organization. Our research indicates that they had more than 600,000 members. They paid 25 cents a year. They had chapters throughout the southern region of the United States, including Oklahoma and Texas. So they had, that was the first what we call mass movement of the demand for reparations under the concept of pensions for ex-enslaved Africans. So in 1915, in Washington, D.C., the National Ex-Slave Bounty and Pension Association filed a lawsuit against the United States government for these pensions. And they didn't win the lawsuit. They, and matter of fact, they indicted Callie House and some of the leaders, saying that they committed mail fraud. A lot of people think Garvey Movement was the first efforts on the part of the U.S. government to disrupt our movement and our leadership, but it was really started with Callie House on the mail fraud scheme from a flyer that they had sent around mobilizing their people. And the judge told Callie House that they were convicting her because she knew that white folks were never going to give that movement what they were asking for. So she was convicted and served a year and a day in penitentiary, a federal penitentiary in Tennessee. So that is the origin of the first mass reparations movement. Then we go into the Garvey Movement that really was pushing repatriation, and we move on into the 1950s, where the issue reemerged under the leadership of Queen Mother Moore in 1955 and Dora Abubakar, who created an African Reparations Descendants Organization. In 1962, Queen Mother Moore actually went to the United Nations demanding reparations in a protest that she led in 1962. Moving on, Malcolm made a statement on reparations. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad and Muhammad Speaks began to have a platform for reparations, and Muhammad Speaks during that period. But then the issue really blew up in 1969, well, actually 68 and 69, because in 1968, with the announcement of the forming of the Republic of New Africa that called for the cessation in five states and $400 billion led by Dr. Imari Obadeli and his brother and many others who signed the Declaration of Independence, the idea began to emerge once again. But it really hit the news in 1969, coming out of a conference on economics in Detroit. James Forman, the former executive director of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, and a group he led, marched into the very well-known and wealthy church in New York, Riverside Church, and disrupted the church service and demanded $500 million on the spot. So the press picked it up all over the country, the New York Times and major newspapers, and for 30 days, James Forman and his followers marched around the National Council of Churches for 30 days. So that gave the reparations movement some legs going into the 70s. And then, of course, in March of 1972 in Gary, Indiana, at the National Black Political Convention that was convened, Richard Hatcher had been elected mayor in 1967. So we considered Gary at that time the black city with a black mayor, and that's where the convention was held. Well, once again, Queen Mother Moore, I can see her in the hallways now. There were 10,000 black people from all over the country, and Queen Mother Moore was disseminating her leaflets saying, reparations now, reparations now. So she, as a representative of the Republic of New Africa, along with Imari Obadeli, they were able to infuse into the outcome of the black political agenda the demand for reparation for black people, and presented it to the presidential candidates in 1972. So we go on and on, and we go into the 80s, and in 1987, I believe it was, at Howard University, the National Conference of Black Lawyers had a conference, in Chokwe Lumumba, the late Chokwe Lumumba, who made his transition a few years ago, had become the mayor of Jackson, Mississippi. At that time, was part of the Republic of New Africa with Nkechi Kaifa and Imari Obadeli once again, made presentations on the question of reparations for African people in this country. And they put it in a little pamphlet, and after that, the idea emerged that there needed to be some coalitional group to bring black people together in our continuing advocacy around the question of reparations. So out of that, by 1988, they established and founded the National Coalition for Blacks for Reparation in America. And the reaction and inspiration for this in the early 80s, the Japanese had received reparations for their internment during World War II, and a study commission had emerged which recommended reparations for those interned Japanese. So reparations Ray in Detroit, who had been an advocate for reparations yep. for many years, went to Congressman Conyers and urged him to put a study bill in that mimicked what the Japanese had done in the early 80s. And so in COBRA emerged in 1989, and the first introduction of what is now known as H.R. 40 was introduced by John Conyers. And so throughout the 80s into the 90s, the National Coalition for Blacks for Reparations were pushing H.R. 40 as a study bill to examine the impact of our enslavement and to make reparations. That bill never moved, never really got off a dime, never really got the sponsorship to get on the table of the Congress of the United States. But in COBRA kept the issue of reparations alive. And going in to the 1990s, well, actually, let's back up, the 1990. In 1993, there was a reparations, Pan-African Reparations Conference in Abuja, Nigeria. Matter of fact, Dr. Jacob Carruthers and Dr. Ron Walters were invited to attend as delegates for the U.S. delegation. Chief Abiola, who was quite a wealthy man in Nigeria, an oil magnate, convened the meeting and paid for everybody in the African world to attend the meeting. And out of that came the African reparations movement worldwide that took us into a level of connecting the African people throughout the world who were demanding reparations in the diaspora on the continent, in Europe, et cetera. So we move on. I don't know how, if you want me to keep going.
No, no, please.
You know, I can go.
Yeah.
If we need, if you need to stop me, but I'm getting ready to go into the 90s and into the UN World Conference Against Racism, and maybe I could just stop right there and let you ask me some questions.
Well, I know I have a caller on and may want to ask a question, but I definitely love the history. I love the chronology of the history. I think it's very important to bring it up to where we are today and what's happening. But we have a caller, 646. 646.
Oshie and brother Conrad as well. Just basically a couple of things. Number one, over the period of time that you have been in this reparation movement, have you seen anything like the upswing that's going on with this reparation movement based on what's happening with this new upstart group, ADOS?
Yeah, I think that that's, you know, in 2000, the American descendants of slaves, that's what they call themselves, that is an online entity through social media and Twitter and Facebook, initiated by Yvette Carnell and Antonio Moore, who were bloggers and people who had been for a number of years had podcasts and radio broadcasts, that emerged into this reparations discussion, where now presidential candidates have been, it's on the lips. But in 2000, in COBRA managed to get in the Democratic Party platform have it in front of my hands right now, the urging of the presidential candidates, and actually the Democratic Party had that in the platform. So we forget about that. We forget about going into Durban with the leadership of the December 12th movement and the National Black United Front that mobilized 400 people to go to Durban to participate in the UN World Conference and hook up with the African and African Descendants Caucus and the African group on the continent and push the UN World Conference to declare that the transatlantic slave trade, slavery and colonialism were crimes against humanity. The point I'm making, this was in the news worldwide. This dominated the news during the whole summer, going from July to September, of course. 9/11 took it off. So the current discussion with presidential candidates reacting to the question of reparation emerges out of this long struggle, but this is not the first time that it's been in the news at this level.
Hold on right there for a second. Now let's clarify this, because I'm leading to something. You're saying from 2000 up until the time that 9/11 had, the reparation movement was moving forward, and the only thing that basically stopped it or slowed it down was 9/11. Could you clarify that?
I would call it a setback.
Based on 9/11, the setback was because the media no longer put it into play. So politicians and the black community had nothing really to do with it.
What is that now, sir?
So politicians and the black community had really nothing to do with it. It was just basically a media wipeout then.
I don't know if I quite understand what you're saying, but it's up until that point, the issue of reparations was in the news quite a bit. It was on the lips. Randall Robinson's book, The Debt, had been published. Ray Winburn's book, well, that was after 9/11, but I can remember Newsweek and Time did major stories on the reparations movement. There was the reparations coordinating group with Ogletree talking about filing lawsuits against the U.S. government. There was the Tulsa issue. So there was a lot of organizing and different multiple tactics and strategies that was in the press. That's all I'm saying.
Also,
so 9/11 took it out of the press, and we went into this super patriotic period in the media in this country.
Okay. So I basically, what you're saying is, because 9/11 and the so-called super patriot, it slowed the movement down to the present. All right. So now to the present, we come with this situation of ADOS, an organization led by Yvette Carnell and Antonio Moore, who I would basically say have some right to move forward in this way things are with the way things are presented, like the Me Too movement and all of the Black Lives Matter and all of these. You know, it's like a quick type thing of, if the media decides they want to accept you and they want to run with the BS, they run with it. But my position is this. How could any reparations movement move forward based on the nature of white supremacy, the way that it operates and the way that it works, and in all honesty, not even the true understanding by the everyday mokes of the world, if you, organization, and COBRA, and other reparation organizations aren't able to come together in a row with these DOS members and forge some sort of alliance on how one is going to act, how is one going to behave, how is one going to present the direction of dealing with reparations come November 2020, this will all be a wrap. Because what's happening here, Brother Rowell, is that the divide is already being established on how it's going to not only be manipulated in the media, it's going to be manipulated by black folks against one another and then other ethnic groups and things of that nature. What has to happen is, and I hope that you understand what I'm saying to you, everybody is basically going to have to stop talking right now, come together in a room, iron out these differences, come together on the united front, or this is nothing more than going to be a game played on black people like everything else in this country and every other movement has been played on black people. And then what's really maybe going to happen is, because history will show this, is that anytime you have other ethnic groups come into the equation, those are the ones who benefit, and black folks don't get nothing but a foot in their ass. Because there has been no movement in this country where there's been so-called allies that have come in to work with black people that haven't benefited and black folks benefit. You can't name me one thing.
All right, Brother Jay, thank you for your call. Thank you for listening. Continue to listen, brother. Brother, go ahead, Conrad, respond.
Yeah, I think there may be some merit. However, I don't know if the application of how Black Lives Matter rolled out in the Me Too movement through social media is applicable to what is needed in organizing to push forward for the demand for reparations. I think this is a different kind of issue that required organizational on-the-ground interaction. It can't just be spontaneously initiated through social media and Twitter activity. I don't think it's the same kind. So I think that this has caused a problem because the ADOS group popped up with no connection to any of the organizing that had taken place. In addition to that, the ADOS group appeared to take positions that were counter to the unity that had been developed in the reparations movement, with an anti-African immigrant position, with an anti-Pan-African position, draping themselves in the American flag in their imagery. So these began to cause problems in interaction. I would say the brother may have some merit about going in a room, and maybe that will happen. On yesterday, I was able to meet with the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, with the National Co-Chair of NCOBRA, Brother Cam Howard. We spent quite some time with Minister Farrakhan, who's been very supportive of our work in the reparations movement. Matter of fact, in 2003, at the Salam restaurant in Chicago, along with myself, Minister Farrakhan and I convened what became known as the Indaba movement.
I say.
I think there's some merit in what the brother is saying, but we got into some back and forth on the internet that has gotten kind of nasty and uncivil, and particularly on the part of some of the ADOS people. Yeah. Who are on the internet. So where we are right now, I think their theoretical and intellectual father of this ADOS movement is William Sandy Darity, who's an economics professor out of Duke University, He and Mark Thompson, who sometimes is a commentator on MSNBC, who has a SiriusXM radio program, there was a lot of tension and threats of Joy Reid on MSNBC. It's gotten kind of ugly over the last week. So they put out a joint statement yesterday saying that even though ADOS and COBRA may have some differences, neither one of them is a proponent of these harassing attacks and advocacies of violence that seem to be emerging in these internet discussions by people going back and forth. So I think the brother may have some merit. However, there are people who have a lot of suspicions about the ADOS movement. I think NCOBRA is moving forward. Minister Farrakhan is in full support of the National Coalition for Black Reparation in America's conference that will be held in Detroit June 20th to 23rd. He said that he was going to have it live stream throughout the world, and the global African community could witness the conference of NCOBRA as we continue to push. Now, H.R. 40 has been revised through the work of NCOBRA, working with the National African Reparations Commission. So it's no longer just a study bill. It's a remedy bill to look at the remedies that should be addressed for black people in this country. So we know that we don't need much study. Many studies have been made to give the scholarly and intellectual and theoretical and public policy rationale for African people in America to have full repair through the concept of reparations. So that's kind of where we are. It's a lot of organizing is taking place. The issue has resurfaced in the media. And in COBRA, many of our ancestors who laid the foundation, Imari Obadeli, Dorothy Lewis Benton, Baba Hannibal are free, Sister Aripo, the list goes on and on. There are many unsung heroines and heroes who have dedicated themselves over the last 30, 40, 50 years in this country to build the reparations movement so that the masses of our people at least know and support the idea of reparations. The question is now politically in what form, how it would take place, et cetera, et cetera.
You know, Doc, that's what needs to be discussed. I know yesterday on here in Atlanta on the talk show radio that I was listening to, and unfortunately I didn't listen because I was doing some things, but not once did I hear anything about the National Coalition for Black Reparations in America in COBRA, nor any other organization except for, they didn't even mention ADOS. But what they kept mentioning is, how are these reparations going to be given? What is the method and the mode? Are we going to be getting a check? You know, Doherty had a formula based on our years, the number of us here, and so forth and so on, which come out to over $400,000 per person here in America that we would receive, supposedly, you know. And I know for many of our people, that's the bottom line. But see, I look at it this way. If we gave you some money and you didn't pull that money to develop institutions, it's just like Charles Cutheimer. Charles Cutheimer was a editorialist, a columnist. And at one time, I think he was in New York and in D.C., but I can't remember when he wrote this column. All I know, it was in the late 70s. I was still on the fire department. In fact, I was just new on the fire department relatively. And I read this article that he said we should give them reparations. We gave them affirmative action. We gave them this. We gave them that. Give them reparations. It'll be like a big stimulus package. And now we can tell them to shut the hell up. And we can go on with our business as usual. And that is the same situation here, because we're not talking about, all we're talking about is some cash. We're not talking about building institutions to change the conditions of African people. And not only that, Brother Conrad, the Caucasians here, who are they? Are they not Europeans? Did they not do what they've done to us here in the Caribbean, in South America, and on the continent?
They're the same people. But yet we're trying to say, and I understand the brutality of the enslavement system here in America, but the bottom line is we need to push for reparations and repair globally. It isn't to me a worldwide African move to repair the damage that Europeans have done on the continent throughout the diaspora. And that repair must be in the form of some kind of way that we can build institutions, build infrastructure so we could be a whole people again, not just have some money and go buy a Cadillac or live it up, because pretty soon that will be gone. You see, that's my contention.
Well, you don't get an argument out of me. And in fact, the reparations movement through CARICOM, through the Africa Group, through the African and African Descendants Caucus, we had great Pan-African unity that still exists as we went into Durban in the summer of 2001. So the reparations movement for African people, in fact, is worldwide, and it interacts with each other through supporting each other in the various regions. So I agree with your position. As a matter of fact, over the years, people have jokingly said, if black people get a check of any considerable amount, they'll just turn around and give it right back to the white man. So part of the repair, as you're pointing out, is also raising the consciousness of our people so that we understand the need for full repair by building education that will turn around the educational system, the economic and social conditions of black people. So I think you hit on quite a point there, Brother Oshie.
Well, you know, that was a discussion.
Is the internal discussion,
right,
that we have to have in terms of our advocacy there,
right,
of about five different ideas: cessation and guarantees and non-repetition and restitution and compensation and satisfaction and rehabilitation. These are areas, and under each one of those areas are ideas that have emerged through INCOBRA around this full repair idea, because we need to be repaired as an African people. The damage was so deep,
yeah,
that we became in disrepair.
Right.
So the question that many people often say also is, there's not enough money in the world that can pay for what happened to African people through our enslavement and the colonialism of Africa and the dividing up of Africa through the Berlin Conference and the rupture and rape of Africa. So the enslavement of our people and Central and South America and the Caribbean islands and so forth and so on. So I think you hit on quite a point there.
And that internal repair, and our good brother Ken Bridges often mentioned that, and God rest his soul. He said, we need internal reparations. We need to repair ourselves. We need to come together first, because then that becomes clear for us. And then now we know why the demand is and what is going to be used for. You know, just like I said, if we're given reparations with the mindset we have, it's just like a big stimulus package. You know, you get this money and the economy now is booming, because why? You got some dough and you just spending it at this store, that store, you know, this car, that car. But we need internal reparations so we clearly understand. And it is global, Brother Conrad. It is global. We cannot just talk about America and just like Ados is doing and saying, no, this is only for American. In fact, I hate their term, because you know I don't believe that we were slaves. We were captives, and a slave is somebody or something that submits its will to a master, and we never and will never submit. There's over 400 recorded revolts of our people fighting. So we are not slaves. We were captives, and we are always fighting. And so I'm saying is that for our repair, we need to first come together. And just like the Indaba process, I was fortunate enough to go to at least two of the Indabas. I know the first one, I think, was in Jackson, called by Hannibal Lab Freak in Jackson, Mississippi, correct?
He was the host.
Okay, yes.
Yes.
And then go ahead, comrade. I'm sorry.
Yeah, so the 30th Annual National INCOBRA Convention, we have to keep working among ourselves on this reparations question and the reparations movement. So in COBRA's 30th annual national convention is in Detroit. Brother Oshie at the Timbuktu Academy of Science and Technology. And I would urge anyone in your listening audience to call 202-643-1460. Go on the website, in COBRA's website, to incobraonline.org.
Incobraonline.org. Okay.
Yes. Those of, who may be listening to your podcast, I urge them to consider coming to Detroit and joining in COBRA and helping to build and strengthen this work. This is so timely, and you bring up Ken Bridges, and I remember he came to my house while he was developing this concept of Mata, and he sat in my living room, and we discovered that both of us had been athletes in our background. Of course, obviously, you think you were the greatest football player coming out of the state of Wisconsin. But Ken and I didn't really want to meet with Ken. And I didn't want to meet with anybody about some Mata. But anyway, I was finally maneuvered into meeting with him, and they brought him to my house, and we were sitting in the living room. And one thing led to another, and it turned out that he was a quarterback in high school in Detroit.
Oh.
Well, what in the world did I find that out for? Because I was a quarterback in high school in Chicago.
Right on.
And so we ended up trying to be quarterbacks in my living room through Discord. And we went back and forth, and I think we must have met for 6 hours, Oshie. This is a true story.
Yeah.
Ken and I. But through that process, after Durban, when the Durban 400 and Inbuff and D12 moved now into organizing a millions of reparations of rally August 17, 2002 in Washington, D.C., Ken wanted to participate, and he kept saying we could have internal repair and the external demand. So we kept going back and forth, and finally we agreed to allow Ken to present on the stage of that Millions for Reparations rally, where more than 50,000 people attended from 34 states, 67 cities that was seen on C-SPAN, to put forward the idea of internal repair and its relationship to an external demand. And behind the scenes, we were struggling for resources to pull off that rally in Washington, D.C., on the Mall. And I'm going to let this out now because a lot of people don't know this. Ken Bridges donated $25,000 to make that reparations rally success. Wow.
He was a beautiful brother. I mean, when I came to Kansas City for the Inbuff.
No, you might let your audience know, you may have in the past, that he was one of the brothers that was
killed,
taken away from us by the sniper.
Right. That's what I was about to mention, because I was coming into Kansas City for the Inbuff meeting when that happened. And Brother Leon Dixon of the Kansas City chapter picked me up from the hotel, and he told me that Ken Bridges had been killed. In D.C. area, in Virginia area, who's on his way to a meeting, you know. And what a beautiful brother that man was. A husband, a father, just a beautiful man who could have been in corporate America, but he chose to do some things to work for our people. What a beautiful brother that guy took. That angers me to this very day, you know. But so now we come into Millions More for Reparations, and some other activities are starting to happen. Then there's a wane in terms of the movement for reparations. And I know constantly trying to get H.R. 40 discussed, you know, just a bill that really just looks at the feasibility, you know, and all of that.
Not anymore. It's a remedy bill.
Okay.
It's been upgraded.
Right.
It's not just a study bill. It's a bill that deals with specific remedies for the total repair. It's been upgraded thanks to the work of INCOBRA and particularly Brother Cam Howard. So it's just not a study bill. We got to get that word out. It's a reparations study and remedy bill now.
Who in Congress is pushing forth on that bill?
The person who signed on to it now is Sheila Jackson Lee.
Okay,
out of Texas.
Okay. Well, they all should. Every one of them should, you know.
Yes.
But, you know, considering now, like I said, with the ADOS movement, I think that what is very problematic. I'll tell you what, because I know you don't have that much time, and I know these callers want to get to you. So before I make my question, I'd like to take another call. 602, good morning, 602.
Yes, Brother Oshie, good morning and good morning to your guests.
Good morning, Marcus. Go ahead.
I just want to say, I don't think reparation should be just exclusive, because I hear some people saying, we should only get money. I think we should get it all. Get money, get repair, get institutions. It shouldn't be, it should be everything. See, we should get financial restitution. We should get institution, whatever, free college, whatever. We should get it all. It shouldn't be just exclusively, finances alone or just some educational opportunities alone. It should be all inclusive. And I'll hang up and hear what your Brother Conrad has to say about that.
Thank you, Brother Marcus.
Well, I agree with him. We're talking about full repair, and full repair means the totality of the institutional impact to create the mechanisms for that repair to take place, just as you indicated a few minutes ago, Oshie. Yes, I agree with the brother.
Because, just as I read the ADOS information, they specifically just continue to talk about money, that it's a money issue. Unfortunately, that doesn't change any dynamics here. Just getting a check, European Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege will continue to prevail and even deeper. And, of course, it'll continue to be funded by us, because if we're not pulling those resources to build institutions, only thing that we're doing is stimulating the economy, And then once it's over, just like in that Charles Kottheimer article, shut the hell up. We done gave you this. We done gave you affirmative action, model cities, this, that, and the other. Now we gave you reparations. And so shut the hell up and take whatever we give you. The discrimination will continue to prevail. The fact that we'll continue to beg crackers for jobs. The fact that we continue to beg crackers to let us live in your neighborhoods and go to your schools. See, if there's going to be a repair for us, then it must be a repair for us globally, and even if it's here in the States, it must repair us to run our own community, to have institutions within our community. I ain't talking about them damn churches. I'm talking about schools and businesses in our community. When we look at what happened.
So when we talk about repair, we're talking about the rewriting of history. We're talking about the curriculums in our schools that NBUF worked on for so many years through the African-centered education movement, so that we can part of the, people used to ask Malcolm X all the time, Minister Malcolm, why do you talk about Africa so much? And Malcolm had a pretty concise answer. Because you left your mind in Africa.
That's right.
So a great deal of the repair is the consciousness of who we are in relationship to our past and its relationship to moving forward as a people, because so much of our history has been distorted, disrupted, hidden. To know some of the great achievements as you were doing your libations before we were captured and introduced into this country. Mm-hmm. So that's just the institutional, to know what we're supposed to do because our consciousness, our mind, through our education, has helped repair us and brought us into a consciousness that we would struggle at a greater level for self-determination and independence, leading to liberation. So you would not get an argument out of me, Brother O.C., but I'm going to get prepared to shut this down.
I know.
I got to move on, but I appreciate you reaching out. You know, you're an old fireman who thinks that you put out fires, but we don't want you to, now in this life, to put out fires.
We'll start them.
We want you to start this fire through your podcast, which you've been doing. How long you been doing this now?
4 years, man, over 4 years. It'll be 5 years in October.
Yep. Wow. Well, you've been lighting some fires. Yep. In a different kind of way, and I appreciate what you're doing with this radio show.
Well, I appreciate you every time I've asked you to come on when Dr. Francis passed and other times, and you've always come through. I've read you before I ever met you when I had a chance to meet you. A beautiful spirit that you are, and we've become friends ever since and always will be. And I appreciate you, Dr.
Well, you
Connor.
Know, Brother Olsie, I got to know you fairly well, and I knew in the fall I couldn't get a hold of you.
That's right.
Between about three and seven, because you were out there organizing those little kids in your football league up there in Milwaukee.
That's right.
And I used to get so frustrated. I would call, and then I finally... Oh, she would say, oh, you know, I was coaching. I had my teams out there.
That's
so,
right.
That's how we kind of connected, because we both had a love for sports and athletics and its relationship, really, to organizing in the black movement.
You know it, brother. God bless you, Conrad. I'm going to read your article in this week's Reparations and Pan-African in the second hour. You take care of yourself. God bless you. I'll communicate with you, brothers and sisters. We thank God, Dr. Conrad World, for being our guest this morning.
Well, thank you for having me, brother.
All right
now.
Peace to you. And that was Brother Conrad World. We're going to take a break. When we come back from the break, we'll start the second half of the program. And as I said, I'm going to read that article from the Chicago Crusader. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. You stay right with us. We'll be right back.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Other programs here on Time for an Awakening Media on Mondays from 6 to 8, all times I'm going to give are Eastern times. And Monday from 6 to 8, Acres of Diamonds. Right after Acres of Diamonds is Let's Buy Black 365 from 8 to 9. On Tuesday, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers. On Wednesdays, Revive with Sister POC from 8 to 10. On Thursdays, Joy and Troy from 7 p.m. Joy and Troy program. And then on Friday, today is Friday. If it's 8 p.m. and it's Friday, it's time for an awakening, brothers and sisters, with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Tomorrow, Saturday Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore, 10 a.m. to 12 noon. And then Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. is Revive with Sister POC. And then Sunday evening, 7 p.m. until it once again is time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And of course, the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. Let's get back to the discussion on the issue of reparations. Yesterday, I was, let me just at least read one, today's Inye Sesim, which is Friday. Because there were some really good ones that preceded it, but we may not have the time, but I'm going to tell you, you got to get Baba Baruti's Inye Sesim. It is outstanding. So each day when you read it, it fortifies you. It strengthens you. It gives you the kind of courage that you need to face this madness that we're seeking, that we're sensing, rather. Okay, March 22nd. Pain is perceived as negative, but has a positive interaction with the body as it makes the self aware of injury and the extent of that injury. National Shrine of Africans in America. Warriors detest weakness among would-be warriors. However, though would-be warriors become the majority of a potentially more powerful army, the enemy's army, this detestment can become a distraction and sap the warrior's stamina and will. It is stressful to have to fight your own and the enemy in order to free your own from the enemy. That's where I am, brother. I had to break this because that's where I am. That's why I'm saying I'd rather struggle with us as African people in a world of our choosing than to be a fool in this cracker's dream, because his dream is a nightmare for us. That sentence right there says it all. It is stressful to have to fight your own people and the enemy in order to free your own people from the enemy. When our minds become unnecessarily laden with battles against external enemies, as well as those who should be fighting by our sides, but have either turned traitor or pathetic bystander, or energy is drained to our enemy's advantage. We cannot allow ourselves to be sidetracked into a stress-inducing, psychologically arresting frustration over those among us who have crossed over to swell the ranks of our enemies. Those thoughts must not be allowed to dominate even a fraction of our thinking. They destroy the clarity of our vision. Affirm, I learn from pain. Affirm, I learn from pain. I'm going to take this call. Call 404-404. Go ahead. 404. Okay. Keep you on hold. Wait a minute. You seem like you're coming back. 404. Go ahead.
Hey, man. You got what you read was right on the money, man.
I know, isn't it? I tell you, when the person who has the proverb or the saying comes out and we give them their credit for what they've stated, but then Baba Baruti adds his narrative to it, it's just pointed, man. It's just hard-hitting. And to me, I've been saying that for some time. I hate the fact that, I mean, even on this radio program, I used to tell this one brother, this cat from St. Louis, you know, to me, I told myself, this is ludicrous. I mean, arguing with you about whether or not we should be independent, self-determining, liberated, or sovereign. That's crazy. We shouldn't be arguing about whether that should be a fact. In fact, the only discussion we should have is how do we achieve it? How can we make it become a reality in our time for our people globally? You know, except arguing about you shouldn't tell the people they shouldn't do this, that. Man, get out of here. I haven't heard from him, which is okay with me, you know, since I've come on to Time for an Awakening. But he was a pain in my ass at Blog Talk, you know, and sometimes I used to have to cut him off, man. You know, go ahead. Go right. ahead, Wes.
Yeah, man, but our own people not stepping up to help our own people, man. The way I see it, got scammed by somebody that everybody know that's way up there, man. And the way it happened was, I put my money in, but then I need a little bit more. And the brother could just go ahead and give me that little smaller loan that I pay him back, man. But I ain't going to put his name out there, man. But this dude way up there, man. And it really hurt me, man. Okay, because I'm out of $850, man.
Whoa. Whoa.
Man, that was my mortgage. I trusted this brother, man.
Whoa.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah.
It just really hurt me, man. I ain't going to put him out there.
You probably ain't the only one, and he needs to be put out there. As you see, I ain't said shit. Excuse me. By apology.
Right.
I ain't said a damn thing about Umar Johnson since he was on the program, because I'm doing some research to find out. Because, see, my contention is this. And let me get Jay in this discussion here.
Yeah.
Brother Jay, are you there?
Yeah.
Okay. My feeling is this. When someone comes to us, and I know there are some people who are very articulate to the point of being very charismatic, and they can manipulate and sway words to make you believe. And see, for me, our situation is such is that someone who says some things from a Pan-African perspective, from an African perspective, talking about unity, talking about, I gravitate to that.
Yeah.
You know, but when that individual has proven otherwise, I'm hurt. Because they have used our struggle, which is a legitimate struggle for freedom and self-determination and liberation and sovereignty for us as a people, to manipulate our people. And that is the worst kind of mother that there is. And they need to be on Front Street. They need to be exercised from our community. They should never, ever have a voice in our community again. Never come to bring forth our community to talk about this, that, and the other when they have used our community. Money has been given. Time has been given. Our hearts are out there because we know we need workers. We need warriors. We need people who are honest, who are committed, who are transparent, to go out here to struggle for us. And I'll support you to the day I come. I am not physically fit the way I was 30, 40, 50 years ago. I'm 65 years old with replaced knees and a bum shoulder. But damn it, I'll do whatever I can to support legitimate aspirations for our people for independence. I ain't going to give the NAACP a damn dime. I wouldn't give a National Action Network a dime. I ain't giving no Negroes nothing. But if you're talking about liberation, if you're talking about the dynamic struggle for our people, if you're talking about real reparations to change the conditions of our people, I was a member of NCOBRA. I was a member of National Black United Front. I was in various organizations. In fact, years ago when I was a Negro, I was the vice president of the NAACP in Milwaukee branch. I've been in our struggle. And all I'm saying is that I support the legitimate, bona fide, verified aspirations and wills of our people. To me, anything else, I ain't going to deal with, you see. So that's where I am.
Well, you know, brother Oshi, what you're saying is so true. And that's why I presented the question that I did to Brother Worldwell the way that I did. Because listen, these brothers and sisters got to come into the room together, close the door, and handle their business. Or the reality is, this reparations movement is going to go to the wayside, like I said, come November of 2020. Because the bottom line is these candidates will say anything. And from what I'm observing is these ADOSs, they don't have no real plan, no clear vision, no nothing. You know what I'm saying? And the brothers and sisters of Encobra, they have an idea, but their plan and their agenda need to be redefined too. I mean, the bottom line is you have to be able to go into a room and come to a consensus when you're dealing with this white man. Because this white man, all he's going to do is manipulate you, confuse you, and F over you. And he's not going to give you nothing any damn way. You got to be able to take it from him. When has the white man ever gave anybody anything that wasn't in a position to cause him some sort of harm?
Right, right.
To make him capitulate.
Right, you're right.
You see what I'm saying?
You're right.
So if we don't come together, get our act together, and deal on the level that we need to, this is just going to be another thing in our coffers that hasn't gone the way that it's supposed to. Some clowns like Joyanne Reed and Mark Thompson, the minister, and the rest of these Negroes, they're nothing but tools for the Google. They just want to try to get you into whiteness and make their position near to whiteness a little bit better. That's all. You know, I give it to you like this. Let's take a Negro like Joyanne Reed. She's a Negro that has a certain middle class position that she wants to, in a sense, solidify so that her children could be able to get an education that she could pay for. That's all. They're not going to get an education and come back and liberate African people. Why don't we be honest to the fact that the majority of black people in this country that are successful don't give a damn about everyday people like me and you?
I say.
They don't want to build anything. They don't want sovereignty. They just want to be closer to white people.
That's right.
Than anything else in the world. That's why we don't have communities. That's why we don't have institutions. That's why we don't have businesses. That's why we have garbage like the NAACP, man, and all of that. Ask yourself this. What do those organizations look for and want, and what do they represent in regards to the liberation of African people?
Only thing they want to do is find that comfortable corner.
There you go.
Or a comfortable niche in European, Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege. That's all they want. They don't want to challenge it.
Right now, Baba Baruti has a new book out called To Educate the People.
Yes.
Everybody that's black should read that book.
Right.
Give you an idea on how you should educate your child to be able to not only be an African, but to deal with this cracker.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine if every so-called Negro peen was to read that book. Do you know the truth of the matter is maybe 20% at best would agree with it or would do anything
in regard to
what he's trying to do because of the sickness.
Right, our minds. We're our minds. That's right.
Wanting to be like Europeans.
Just like, hey, Jay, just like Dr. Fox's book, Addicted to White, The Oppressed in Service, The Oppressed in Service to the Oppressor.
He has a good book, but there's a lot of information that he's not even clear on.
Yep.
Because, in all honesty, he's a Negro peen.
Yeah.
He's not African-centered. So, you know, the thing is, you know, Oshie, Dr. Clark told us something a long time ago. He said, if you really want to be successful in understanding the white man, you got to know his history and you got to know yours. It's just like when you deal with African psychology. You got to be able to know there is an African principle and there is a European principle. You could study the works of Amos Wilson and you could study the works of the so-called great psychologists and compare the two. And you will always find out that the African way is always the best way for you. Because what? You are an African.
That's right.
You're not a European.
That's right.
And this is what the problem is that we're constantly facing. Nobody wants to be an African.
That's right. That's
I
right.
I agree, man.
So when you said earlier, Oshie, about we getting reparations, like Charles Krauthammer said, all we're going to do is give it right back to the white man.
That's right.
That's all. It's going to be like you said, his stimulus package. Now, if things really get heavy, think about it. Do you think it's not beyond him to give these dumb Negroes $25,000 and say that this is your reparation? And I guarantee you, $25,000 in all truthfulness
ain't
is not going to really do anything for you.
No.
But you'll give that whole $25,000 right back to the white man by the end of the month.
Yep. I mean, you can pay some bills, maybe get that little bit closer out of debt, but it ain't nothing. It ain't nothing. Let me get Wes in. Wes, go ahead, Wes. You had a comment?
Yeah, man. Like I say, man, the way I'm looking at it, man, we are our own worst enemy, man.
No, Wes, don't go there, man. Don't go there.
Too, man.
You know?
All this shit going at each other instead of helping each other, man.
See, that's what you got to understand. See, that is not because we're our worst. No, that is because the enemy of us manipulates us.
That,
exactly. See, but we're not our own worst. See, even to break that. Hold on, Wes. To break that phrase down in and of itself, let's deal with it. We are our own worst. The worst is the extreme, the worst that it can be. That's when you use that word, the worst. And then you say an enemy. And what is an enemy? An enemy is somebody who works against your interests, somebody who is out to make sure that you don't achieve what you're supposed to achieve or you will stay in a position. That's not us. We, you know, even in that mindset of the so-called crab in the barrel syndrome, is not us. Even in the mindset of the so-called Willie Lynch, that's not us. What unfortunately has happened is that we do not have our right minds. And so we work against the interests of ourselves by those who are in control. That is the worst enemy. That is the real enemy. That's what the deal is. Go ahead, Wes.
From my point is, okay, the one it's all about helping each other out, man. Okay,
yeah.
That's the only. Okay, the ones that so-called is up on one extra rung of the ladder, if they don't reach down to help a brother or sister up, I'm about ready to kick the damn ladder down. So all of us gonna fucking fall, man. All of them.
Well, let me say this. Okay. Hey, let me say this then, Wes. Kick the ladder down. Get your own ladder. Because what it makes it seem like we're climbing up trying to get to a point where the cracker is. See, that's the point. That's the problem. We should be thinking of being independent. We will never.
Away from them devils, man.
Yes.
I agree.
We can never be who we truly are and should be and want to be in their stuff. This is theirs, not ours.
Yes, sir.
And in their stuff is what you see happening with us. There's a few of us who are the buffer, who are the gatekeepers, who got nice jobs, who have nice positions, who are touted out when there's issues happening, that they're the spokespersons for the community. You know, they're pastors, they're politicians. You know, they're not real leaders of African people. They're gatekeepers.
The way the universe now, man, they're getting exposed, man. Okay? That's the beautiful thing about it. If you ain't coming right, your ass get disposed, man. I don't care if you're on the top, I claim to be on top, think you're on top, or the ones on the bottom, okay, bottom feeders. okay? If you ain't right, you the light gonna bust you in the head, and we gonna know about it. Simple as that. So that's why I'm trying to keep myself, you know, right and tight, man.
I heard that, brother. I heard that, Wes. Okay, let me get another call in here. 602. Good afternoon.
Hello. Yes, brother Oshi. So, years ago, I heard a lecture by Dr. Amos Wilson. And he said, one-tenth, the European is one-tenth of the world's population. And in order for him to rule, he has to recruit from the same group that he is oppressing. And so a lot of black people might say, well, you see, European is population is dwindling. But as his population dwindle, he opens it up more to these toms.
Yeah.
You see, he opens the door more for more toms to come in. Because he know that Tom want to get in closer to white, as Jay said. And so maybe it ain't far-fetched. He may give out some reparation, some financial, you know, to open it up, because that's all they want,
right,
the money.
Right.
You see? It ain't far-fetched Trump to give them reparation. No, it ain't.
No, and you know what? And you're right, because that group of people, us, the so-called millennials, who have no connection with our struggle, didn't know the history that Brother Conrad World just threw down. He gave a good concern. And I should have let him go on to complete the history of the reparations movement to where it is today, and the divisiveness that the ADOS movement has caused within our movement. The bottom line is they should say, listen, elders, let's sit down. Let's have what we used to call back a few years ago, the Indaba, the great sit down. That's what it means, the great sit down, where we have an Indaba process, where we sit down and hammer this stuff out and then come unified to this country, to this government, and literally to the world, because this is a worldwide problem. Like I'm saying, when these crackers, the crackers here, they call themselves American. But who are they? They're English. They're Germans. They're French. They're Spanish. They're Portuguese. They're Europeans. The same damn crackers. And so we need reparations and a repair for ourselves internally. But the external reparations should come from Europe, come from America, Australia, everywhere the cracker has gone. Let me get another caller in here, Brother Marcus. 447.
Good afternoon, good morning, good evening,
good
everybody.
All of that, Brother Paul. How you been, man?
Well, Brother Ochi, I have to apologize, you know.
For what?
You know, you had your, you had your wonderful guest on it.
Oh, no. Listen, Paul. Paul, let me say this to you. No need to apologize. I have a lot of admiration and respect for you. I brought the guest on. I'm doing some personal vetting, you know, because as I stated earlier, I don't know if you had a chance to hear me. Anybody who comes to our community in the problem that we have, and that individual is charismatic, he's articulate, or she, whoever, and they sway our people because we need that. And when you play us for personal gain, monetary gain, you have to be exposed and you have to be a challenge every time you come out. There's a situation with Malefia Ketiasanti, the brother who coined the phrase Afrocentricity out of Temple University. I wish his ass would come down here to Atlanta. Or if I feel he's anywhere in the area, I would go bust him out because he ruined an African-centered school in Kansas City. I have proof. I have proof it was he who destroyed an African-centered school with the brothers and sisters of Kansas City had achieved. So I'm saying to you, those kinds of activities are enemies of our people, and they need to be exposed. So go ahead, Brother Paul.
Well, let me just say this, Brother Oshi. Let me just say this. You know, the thing is, Brother, I play, you know that I lived in America, right?
Right.
And one of the reasons why I ended up there is because my mom's sister lived there, and she moved there with her husband, and she does all right. So my mom
you know, I grew up on what they considered a council estate. We call it a council estate here. You might call it a project over there.
Okay. Yeah. See? Okay.
Yeah. So, and it was a predominantly working class, predominantly white people. I think there's only three black families there. So you can imagine how I had to grow up. But one of the things which I had to do is learn to fight, because most of the times when you deal with these white people who are racist, they're physical. They don't just call you name, they're very physical. So my mum's solution was, you know, my mum comes from a family of 14, and I would sit to my uncles every summer holiday just learn how to punch and kick, and I started martial arts from the age of 8. So that's how I dealt with my situation. But unfortunately, when you get yourself involved in those sort of circles, you get a reputation. So in the end, my mum's solution was to send me to America. But that wasn't the best idea, because I don't even want to go into some of the things that happened, but I ended up coming back here anyway.
Okay.
The bottom line is, the reason why I say this is because the reality of it is that I see people like this. I grew with people like this. I agree with them. I know them when they speak. You can just say three words and I can tell by your body language you're not for real. I understand. But I've been listening to the brother for a long while.
Okay.
When Tariq Nasheed released those videos, Hidden Color, I was distributing them, to people who I knew.
I was too.
Hard to reach.
Yes, was too.
Right.
Okay? Yes.
And it was working. It was working. It was absolutely working. It was a beautiful thing. Whatever we think about the brother, it was working. And it was presenting the way to reach certain people, not like me,
sure,
but other people. Yeah, and it was working. Okay. So before that time, I never knew Umar Jawad. I never heard of him. Yeah. And I didn't really take no notice. Well, I said, I mean, I just saw him as trying to do like we're all trying to do. But as time went on, right, I do a thing which a lot of us here can't do because I got an IT experience. I listened to a lot of radio stations. He was on Blackonomics for 3 days, 4 days. I don't know if you know, David Anderson had a radio station. And he was actually the presenter on there. And I phoned him on that occasion. No problem, I phoned him, spoke to him. He don't know, remember me, but I did. Yeah. And when he came to England, three times now he's been to England. I didn't see him the first time. The second time he came, he was on a radio station. They didn't take calls. The third time he came, not so long ago, they took a call. And that's the only time I've spoke to him. So when he says that I ring him every time he comes to England, he's an idiot. He's a total fool, because I've only rang him once and spoke to him once and he's been in England. Okay? And, you know, the whole shenanigans, starting from the laptop dancer, yeah? I'm not saying there's anything wrong with having a laptop dance. That's his business, right? But what I found odd, right, when he was caught red-handed, right, instead of owning up and saying, yeah, well, he tried to deny it. And when you heard what the sister was saying, he tried to just totally disrespect her. I didn't like that. And I marked his book from there. Because if you're caught, you're caught. Just
right.
Put your hands up.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, you're saying you work for black people and you're on behalf of black people, and you're putting this sister down like she's nothing. Yeah. You were cool, bro. So just put your hands up and accept it. Yeah. And so from that time, I started watching. And he claimed that this basketball player was going to give him £1 million. I don't know who this basketball player was, but all of a sudden he disappeared off the face of the earth. Yeah? So I started thinking, well, this ain't odd here. Then the shenanigans on the internet, which was a total disgrace. I don't know what anybody else thought. I just thought it was total ludicrous. I tried to compare him to anybody, but I couldn't. It says Marcus Garvey. He ain't nothing like Marcus Garvey, yeah? But, you know, and all the rest of it to go with it, yeah? All the rest of the nonsense. And, you know, at the end of the day, I'm saying to myself, who is this brother, really? Who is it? What kind of charade is it? He comes here, right? Listen, brother Ochi, they were selling tickets here, £30 a ticket. Right? And that venue.
How much is that? How much is £30? How much is £30? About $25?
No. £30. Let's say the exchange rate, I think is probably 150. Let's say it's about $55.
Wow.
Right?
Okay.
Mutabruka came here, right? $55 a ticket, right?
Okay.
And that venue, the first time he came, was totally sold out. Totally sold out, okay? I've got nothing wrong with that. But at the end of the day, right? I've been watching how you progress yourself, right? And I'm very suspect of what you're really saying, because you keep contradicting yourself. And everything just says contradiction. And a lot of people ask you questions. You're not answering. You're not asking no questions. Yeah? Because like, if you say you're coming to England to do a talk, that's fine. Get paid for the talk. You're telling people you're building a school. Nobody seen no damn school, Bob. And you, no one seen no sign of nothing. No one seen no sign of... You're telling me you're some principal, but yet nobody in the 4 years has come to say, yeah, you used to teach me. You used to teach me. What is going on?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, see, let me say it this way, Paul, because I understand what you're saying, and we're going to get back to the subject on reparations if you can, you know. But let me just say it this way, Paul. He has nobody but him. He doesn't present any other thing. There is no transparency. There isn't. He didn't show the school. He didn't show the former name of the school any signs or anything to prove that he has this school. So, you know, only thing I can say for him at this moment is wait and see. And I don't think it's going to materialize based upon what I'm hearing and what I'm seeing. And that is a shame. That is unfortunate, because we don't need charlatans in our movement. We need real men and real women that when they step up and they say the things that they say, they mean it. They're held accountable. They're men and women of their word. They have the understanding and compassionate for our people. At this stage of our struggle, this is really bad. But there's been other times it was just as bad. But the bottom line is we got to continue to go. Go ahead, Paul.
Right. I want to give you this information, yeah, because it's important, right? We in this country right here, you heard, I put on this radio station, Prophet Kwaku and Brother Denami. They spoke to you, yeah? They're part of the reparation movement here. They're a fundamental part of that movement, right?
Yes.
And it's headed by a woman we called Esther Jose Stanford, right?
Okay.
Now, I know Esther's been to America, and she's met with Cobra, and they're fully aware who she is. But listen, I have to put this out there, my brother. There's another dimension going on there, and I don't know if you're aware what's happening. In the Caribbean, you know of an organization named CARICOM, okay?
Yes, yes.
And most of us who live here are from those regions, whether it be Trinidad, Jamaica, Barbados, or whatever. We're from those regions, okay? But when you examine what's taking place, I would like to say to Hilary Beckles, who's from Barbados, the professor, Sir, listen to the name, Sir Hilary Beckles. That means he's been entitled by the Queen. Doesn't represent the grassroots movement here. I must make you know that.
He does not represent. Okay, go ahead.
No, right? And this should be really discussed, because what's happening is, I don't know if you knew, if you know what happened with the Mau Mau movement
in Kenya. In Kenya.
They were during their occupation by the British, yeah, when it was a British colony in Kenya, there was a genocide where they killed loads of the Mau Mau, murdered them off, yeah? And the Mau Mau took a legal action in the High Court in this country against the British soldiers, and they won the case. But what took place actually, Baba, is that when they won the case, the majority of the compensation went to the legal authorities. It didn't actually get to the people. They got a small amount of a payout, right? Just recently, I know you're totally unaware of this, but I'm going to make you know this. In the Caribbean, under CARICOM, so Hilary Beckles and his members of his elite, right, received some money from the Scottish University, who accepted that they had been founded on the money of slavery, right? They said that because of that fact, they were willing to pay some sort of reparations. But the point I'm trying to make is, no one knows this, my brother. Nobody knows this. This is kept quiet. Right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I'm saying, what I'm trying to make is very important that we on the ground start speaking to one another, because like Brother Marcus said, this money is going to be paid, but they're already setting it up so that certain people who are part of the elite or part of the aristocracy are going to end up with the money. That's what's going to happen. It's happened in already.
Well, I say this, Brother Paul, I say this, if that is the case, if these individuals are put in those positions and they will reap the benefit of the hit of the misery, the death, the destruction that we have had as a people, those people need to be hung. They need to be executed publicly.
But Ochi, I want people to recognize that when people say it's not happening, it is happening. And people, because Tony Blair, right? It was put to Tony Blair about reparations, and he said slavery was legal. That was his comment, Tony Blair, right? But most people don't know that Tony Blair done a feasibility study. And what did he do? He had some of the top universities here go to the Caribbean and research if they had to pay it out, how it would work, right? And I've listened to some of those people who took out that research. Most people don't even, aren't even aware of that. So, you know, the point I'm trying to make, and I keep saying this, we need to talk to one another, right? Because the way they keep us dumbed down, like this ADOS group, right? This ADOS group has definitely been sent because they recognize that we are on the up and on the move. We've written to our prime minister several times now. They are fully aware of what we're doing. They're fully aware of how we're moving. They're fully aware that we're connecting, right? And what they're trying to do is maneuver themselves in positions so that their own people end up taking, you know how these people work. So we have to consistently talk to one another and expose this business. I'll leave it there, Brother Ochi.
Right on. Thank you, Paul. Because I believe that the reparations movement is a global movement for African people and African self-determination and sovereignty on the continent of Africa and for brothers and sisters throughout the diaspora. It is not to get some money from these crackers so we can have some money in our pocket and say that's it, because of the humiliation and degradation and the theft and rape and murder of our people. And you're willing to sell that out for a few hundred bucks or a few thousand dollars. Oh, hell no. It's deeper than that. So let me get in. Brother Marcus has joined us again. Brother Marcus, go ahead.
Yes, yes, yes. Well, you know, brother Paul, right? What do you say happening in Jamaica and stuff is correct, you know, because they have a reparation movement happening in Jamaica.
Well, you know what I've seen the documentary, and I even told people about it, where you could check the documentary out. And basically the documentary by a sister in Jamaica pretty much had to do with the Rastafari saying to England that we want reparations, that we want to return home, not to Jamaican people. Not everybody on the island of Jamaica is Rasta. Is that true?
Exactly. Yes, it's true.
Yeah. It's true. So they were just talking about the Rastafari. And my contention is it ain't just about anything. It's about us collectively. It's not about one segment or one group. It is us collectively. That's the issue. Mm-hmm. And see, that's our problem. Because to me, if I'm a cracker, I would strategically give Adolf some money. Because if I gave Adolf some money, and there's a lot of Africans here in this country, they're going to be pissed. Because there are some Africans in this country who suffered under colonialism, whose family, who broke. I mean, you know, so because like I'm saying, America, see, I think that sometimes you've been bamboozled thinking that these crackers are different crackers. No, they're the same damn from England. They're England. They're Germans. They're Spanish. They're the same damn crackers.
Exactly.
You know?
Cracker equal a cracker. Yeah, so you're right. They that's why they may give out the money, because it's going to cause a split.
Yes.
You see? And that they know exactly what they're doing. They're calculating. They ain't ruling this long being stupid. You see? So you're right. Right.
Okay. Let me get Jay in this. Jay, what do you got to say?
Hey, listen, I would give the Negro Bean the money too. I mean, because I know it's going to come right back to me.
Yeah.
See, we as a people have one fundamental problem. We don't want to accept the fact that we African. We don't want to come together as Africans. We don't want to identify as being Africans. We don't want to do the necessary things to really fight this cracker. You can't fight this cracker separate.
Right.
The Japanese come together, they fight the cracker. Chinese come together, they fight the cracker. The Russians come together, they fight the cracker.
Although they're crackers themselves.
Everybody comes together, close up shop, and deal with what they had to do. I always refer back to what Mao did with the Chinese people. Now look at the Chinese people today. They are probably the second most powerful country in the world, and maybe the most powerful country if they really wanted to be evil, because they could absolutely destroy the economy of America and make America want to try to go to war with them, which would then lead to the elimination of the planet.
Exactly.
But see, the exactly. reality is this. We want to follow Negroes like Umar Johnson. Now, if you're that sick in your head as a black person that you can't see that that Negro is a damn con man, then you deserve whatever your black ass get. That's my feelings the way this goes. Because he's been in the public long enough for any clear-thinking African that has done any type of study to realize who and what he is. Okay, unfortunately, it takes some of us longer than others. But the reality is, it's right there for you.
Right.
Now,
right.
let's go forward with this reparations thing. I'm sorry to say it, but I see what's going to happen. We're going to get played with this reparations thing.
Oh, yeah. No doubt, Jay. We will definitely get played if this situation, if this situation with Adolf is not resolved, if they don't come together and sit down with NCOBRA, National Black United Fund, and any of the other organizations that have been dealing with reparations, December 12th movement and so forth, and come together with a collective voice on this, we will get played.
And you know something, to be honest with you, Oshie? And I'm sorry to say this, but I have to say it because I got to be truthful about it from my observation of being in these situations for over 30 years. The sickness of our people, if they all got together in the room, nothing will get resolved. Because there's too many separate agendas involved, and they're not based on the principle of one thing, being an African.
Yeah.
Yvette Cornell and Antonio Moore are Negro Peeps. Viola Plummer, Chokwe, Lumumba, all of the other ones, Omawali Clay from the December 12th movement, Roger Williams, they have a certain African principle.
Right.
Carmel Rowell has a certain African principle. So in order for this thing to even come into play, and this is the thing that always makes me feel funny and know I'm on the right path. Whenever you hear the name Minister Farrakhan involved with it, it ain't going to lead to sugar honey iced tea. And I'm sorry to say it, but that's the truth of the matter, because he's too divisive of an individual in the eyes of their dads. Because the majority of them are not strong Africans, and they will be allowed to be manipulated from that one name. So this is why I'm saying, hopefully, we as a people could start coming together in smaller groups and dealing with what you're trying to do right now, Brother Oshie, go back home and repatriate there and try to find things that could bring us together as a people. But if you look in, honestly, Oshie, and you know how much I love you, brother, if you're looking for this reparation movement to go forward with the players that are involved right now...
No, sir, you're right. It ain't happening.
It's not going to happen.
It's not going to happen.
I hope and I pray that it does happen, Oshie, because in a sense, we need it. But let me tell you something. This thing, when it's all said and done, is going to cause more divide than we will imagine if we don't put it to bed right now and address it and deal with it. Because Antonio Moore and Yvette Cornell are not the type of individuals that could lead Africans no goddamn place.
I hear you. All right. All right,
brother.
All right. Brother Wes, go ahead, Wes.
Hey, yes, sir, man. You heard about the Australian Aborigines supposed to got some reparation, right?
Yes, I seen that. I didn't read the full article, but I did see where the indigenous people of what is now called Australia petitioned to the government to seek their land back, their ancestral lands back, and some compensation. I did see that. You know.
Yes, sir. And the brothers in South Africa, I hear they told them, they gave them devil crackers a time limit to get the hell out of them, get their land back. That's in South Africa.
Right. And I'm anxious to see how that's going to fold. Brother Mulima in South Africa, I saw a clip on him the other day. I love what he said, but it remains to be seen. Just like that. And
that lady that you were talking about from Jamaica, Dr. Rogers had her on his show a couple of months ago.
Yeah, a sister from Jamaica? Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, he sure did. She was on the program. She developed that documentary. And basically the documentary talks about the struggle of the Rastafarian brothers and sisters to be recognized and to seek reparations from England and to repatriate, to go back home and find some land on the continent so they can go to there and, you know, practice tradition.
And see, like, I agree with my man, Brother Jay. Now, too many of most of black people, man, I ain't gonna say me, but they want to be seen too much style now or something. Too many big eyes and little U's, man.
Yeah.
Okay, everybody want to be the top Negro in charge or something, man. All right, instead of all us coming together and say, look here, we this owe to us. This how we going to do it.
Yeah.
And let everybody, you know, most things, we want no damn taxes, free education, health care, and all of the above. But I know how these crackers think, man. How they going to do it? They going to say, y'all want free health care, reparation. Take this damn FRID chip.
Well, right? You know, my thing is reparations, considering how evil this country is and continues to be, I don't see us having a situation where reparations will really help us in this environment. Nothing will help us in this environment as far as I'm concerned.
Yes, sir. Then I saw an episode on Outer Limits where these crackers went to another planet. Guess what they did? Kill all the indigenous people on that planet. Okay? But the people that planet were so smart, they already know how to disguise themselves like the devil.
I like to see that episode. All right, Wes. Okay, we got another caller. 267. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon or good evening, Brother Oshi. It's Sister Susumi.
Oh, Sister Susumi. Yes, I can. Calling from Botswana. I can hear you very well. How are you today?
I'm doing very well, very well. But, you know, I had to call in because I'm going to admit I'm one of those that have been, you know, duped by the guest that you had on the call.
Okay, don't worry about it.
Because Dr. Omar Johnson. Yeah. So I said, let me just go on and admit that I'm one of those that have been listening and following him a little bit before I left the U.S. But, you know, everything is a lesson in life.
Yes.
And So that's how I look at that.
Sister Susumi, let me say this. Those of us whose heart and mind are down for the liberation of our people, if someone comes to us and we hear what we've been longing to hear, now we don't know that's a wolf. We don't know that's somebody who's pretending to be what he's not. We don't know that. Only way we'll know that is by the fruits that they bear or by their actions. The words are great, but their actions speak something different. And so, therefore, when you hear it, you gravitate to it. So I wouldn't even bother with it. Otherwise, are you doing fine?
I am doing wonderful. And I'll tell you what, I'm going to bring this point. The reason I would have never really been part of his group, I liked a lot of things he said. I know, you know, there are certain issues that he touched on that The issue that for me was sort of a deal breaker was that he does not consider mulattoes. He considers them black and African mulattoes. So he does not have the same, you know, he does not take into account the historical aspect of how they've been part of the buffer. group
right.
that has traditionally gone against the interests of African people. So for me, that was really always a really sticky. I just could never completely be for him because that was one of the things that I felt, you know, just because you have one black parent, I think we need a little bit better definition than that. So otherwise, I'm doing really well. And I wanted to comment on, I think, Brother Jamie. And I have to thank Brother Paul. I mean, he was so passionate about this whole thing because I also heard from him about the brother. So, but anyhow, the Minister Farrakhan issue, when I first came to Botswana, by the way, I don't think our people will ever, ever heal in the land of their enemy.
Hello.
So I'm all about reconciliation. Yes. Anybody who's interested in looking at Botswana, Southern Africa, as I want to call it, I will do whatever it takes to assist anybody in seeing the place and making a decision.
Well,
because this is a, you know, home is still home.
Yeah. Well, you
and
know,
I think Southern Africa.
Well, you know, I'm
Botswana.
I'm going to Ghana.
I think those are places that need that have not been kept before.
Sure.
By Africans in the diaspora. So.
Well, you know, there's a lot of places, Sister Susumi. There's a lot of places like where you are in Botswana, Tanzania. What am I thinking of? But a lot of other places, particularly eastern southern part, that are beautiful. There's no conflicts. You know, there are great places for us to settle. You know, Tanzania was what I was thinking of.
But I've heard lots of good things about Tanzania, too.
I've heard some good things about...
But I think the key to it, Brother Oshi, we are going to have to be intentional about connecting with each other.
Yes.
Africans on the continent and the Africans in the diaspora and everywhere else. And until we're intentional about forming solid, genuine relationships so that we really know each other, so that way we can trust each other and respect each other, we are not going to be able to achieve this.
I think that's
really important.
That's right. Because, see, just as you just stated, we are one Africa, and we have been harmed by an entity, Europeans, gravely. And the only solution for us and to get the redress we need is to unify as one Africans, not as Nigerians, not as Ghanaians or Senegalese or South Africans or Americans or Caribbeans or whatever else. We must recognize that we are one African. I know what Jay says, and he's right. We don't want to be Africans because the cracker has made it such and put into our minds that we should hate who we are, you know. But I know my program's coming down to an end. I appreciate your call. I'm going to be leaving April 5th. In 2 weeks from today, I'll be on my way to Ghana.
Oh, safe travels. I'm sure you'll really enjoy it. There's no place like home. So
that's right.
That's the message I'm sending out because it's like night and day compared to when I was in Kentucky. So I do not regret the few challenges and hiccups that I've had to go through to be able to be home. So
yes.
Home welcomes everybody.
Ashe.
Thank you so much, Brother.
No, thank you, Sister Susumi, and bless you.
Have a blessed, on the call.
You have a blessed weekend, Sister Susumi. Peace.
See you too.
Brothers and sisters, we coming to an end of the program. I thank all those who have called, those who have listened. I thank my guest, Dr. Conrad World, who I have a lot of admiration and respect for. I didn't read his article. We'll read it Monday. Or supposed to have a pro. Oh, no, I think it's Monday, April 1st. My good brother, Dr. Renoka Rashidi, will be with us on Monday, April 1st. This Monday, I'm going to continue the reparations discussion. So if you have some additional information, brothers and sisters in the listening audience, please call in and let's talk about it. If you are a supporter of ADOS, call in. I mean, I listened to the radio program here in Atlanta yesterday, and not one, at least as far as I listen, I couldn't listen to the whole program from start to finish. Not one of them mentioned any of the organizations. They were mentioned the NAACP. They were mentioned the Congressional Black Caucus, talking about handling reparations, leaving it into their hands to handle it. I'm like, you got to be kidding. And then, of course, it was all about money. And then the problem of how to deal with money, a lot of confusion. So to me, stop the confusion. Let us work together. Brothers and sisters, we end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. And this program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E. Because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, you have a great weekend. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Abibi Fahodio. Abibi Fahodio means our victorious destiny. Abibi Fahodio family, have a blessed weekend. Peace.